Hello and welcome for the Swine Disease Reporting System number 75. My name is Jovan Trevis, I'm with the Swine Disease Reporting System.
Hi, my name is Guilherme, also at the SDRS.
Hello, Daniel Linhares with the SDRS team.
And today we also have a new SDRS member that is Elisa Di Conti that has joined the program here. Hi, Elisa.
Hi.
And today we have the pleasure to cover the finds from the month of April and have as host Dr. Cameron Smith. Dr. Smith is a graduate from the Iowa State University in 2002 and since then has joined the Pipestone Veterinary Service and Pipestone Management. Dr. Smith works with swine disease health areas of interest that includes his swine disease diagnostics and laboratory testing. He will share his experience in interpreting SDRS monthly finds and insights regarding influenza A virus monitoring strategies. Dr. Smith, welcome to this podcast.
Thank you guys very much.
It's our pleasure to have you here. Before we go to that, Glenn, what's the main finds for the SDRS during the month of April?
Sure, Giovanni, let's start with PRRS virus. That is our first page of the report, that the positivity of PRRS remains high in the winter market category, with over 40% of the cases submitted being positive in the PCR cases. However, what caught our attention in this specific month is because we have a high number of confirmed tissue diagnosis cases from the ISU VDL, which means more clinical cases that were submitted here in the VDL, and the diagnosticians associate these cases with PRRS as the main cause. And also, we got an increase in the OR5 sequencing detected in these months, the L1C.5 specifically, with over 250 sequences classified as that when you put together April and March as for this specific lineage. And which is not usual for the last 2 years. For example, we didn't have these high numbers of L1C.5 in the months of March and April. And just to have an idea of the numbers, the majority of these sequences are coming and are concentrated in Iowa, with 327 sequences coming from Iowa. But we also have detections of this sequencing in Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, South Dakota, Illinois, Indiana, and also Ohio.
It's kind of a late winter for PRRS, right? It was quiet until then, and now it seems to be picking up.
Correct.
Yep, lots of activity, both in the PCR and the sequencing information there. What's about the entire coronavirus?
Yeah, for the entire coronavirus, I have good news that the trend of decreasing positivity remains. And right now we are having an overall positivity for PED at 10% of the cases being positive submitted in the 6 VDLs that we have in the project. And for Delta coronavirus, it's only 3% of the cases that are becoming positive. However, when we look to the state level baseline, so compare the historical data of the state with what's going on right now, Kansas is having a PED activity above the expected. And for Delta coronavirus, Minnesota and Missouri are having positive cases above the expected.
So some regional activity going on. How about the other pathogens that we do monitor in the program?
Yeah, for the other pathogens, I would like to highlight first influenza, that last month we had an increase in the winter market category. And right now I have a decrease in the positivity of this category. And South Farm remains kind of the same, comparing with the month of March. But when you look again to the specific state level, Minnesota is having positive cases above the expected for influenza. And moving to the other pathogens, we have mycoplasma as well that had a slight increase in the positivity in the winter market, only 3%, but it was detected by the project as well as a moderate increase. And also CV3, this one is different. We are having an increase in the winter market and the South Farm positivity that had a substantial increase. And for example, for the South Farm cases submitted in the 6 VDLs, 63% of these cases are positive for PCV3.
Thank you, Guilherme. So returning to you, Dr. Smith, our first question. In March and April of this year, there was an increase in the percentage of positive influenza A virus in all ages categories, starting with the winter market and then South Farms. Based on the historical PCR database of the project, this increased activity of influenza occurs on a season basis in the spring and fall season. So what does this virus find? Why does this virus find the opportunities in these specific seasons, in your opinion?
Well, probably just, I would assume it has something to do with environmental factors, right? We start to open up barns. We also haul manure during those periods of time. So you're spreading biomaterial out in mass. We definitely stress pig populations, whether we pump, whether we don't have our ventilation settings correct for spring and fall. So I'm sure there's some component of stress and there's some component of the environment, whether it's manure, whether it's air leaving the barns, dust, et cetera. But those are, the times of years where we're in transitional ventilation periods and we don't have the heating of the sun to kill virus environmentally. And generally in the winter when it's dead cold, especially some of the PERS research that's been done. I know more of the PERS data than I do specifically of influenza, but one would think it would be similar, that it does tend to be biphasic fall and spring.
And so you talked about PERS, right? And like Guilherme said, we're seeing some increased activity at this point in time. And just curious on your thoughts, what have you been hearing and seeing in the field?
Definitely. It actually was a very good disease year up until probably about a month and a half ago. And right, at least in Iowa and the upper Midwest, we've had a month of seems like 40 mile an hour wind every day. We've definitely moved stuff around. And I think there's also a human factor, as we generally have seen lower disease transmission in the summer. Well, people start taking some biosecurity liberties that they would in the summer, maybe in spring, right? We're starting to think summer type mindset, and the bugs are just waiting there to take advantage of the situation.
Lower the biosecurity, biocontainment bar, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Well, so hopefully it's still time to transmit that message back to the field and say, hey, raise that bar again, because there is some activity going on in grow finish for sure. And then that may translate to a increased self-farm risk, so we can still act right yet this spring. So going back to influenza, our audience always asks about how to monitor that, and so what are the most effective ways to monitor disease influenza, more specific virus activity in barns. And so I wanted to pick your brain on the most effective practical ways, but yet a reliable way to monitor influenza activity.
Yeah, so most of the monitoring that we will do typically is at the sow farm. And ultimately our goal is to make an influenza negative pig at the point of weaning, right? Because a large amount of wean to finish losses are pigs that don't start on feed, right? If they are sick with influenza at the time of weaning, their average daily feed intake will be lower. You'll have more non-starting pigs, and thus usually at week three, week four post-weaning, you'll actually be euthanizing those pigs that didn't start on feed. So getting good early caloric intake is very important immediately or shortly post-weaning. And so maximizing that early feed intake, part of that strategy is to get a flu negative pig at the point of weaning.
And what do you guys use or recommend today to ensure that? Is it some combinations of wipes, or what do you use today?
Yep, right. The influenza is shed out of the epithelial cells, the upper respiratory tract. So whether it's nasal swabs, whether it's oropharyngeal swabs, all the way to lung samples, to tracheal swabs, any of those are great samples to take. Typically, our sow farms will do 10 nasal or oropharyngeal swabs at the point of weaning at minimum monthly to track whether it's influenza in this case, but also you can track for PERS and other pathogens with that sample type. But basically, you need to have material from the upper respiratory tract in that sample. Oral fluids post-weaning and in the farrowing crate are a little more difficult, as the pigs won't like, or it's more difficult to get the sample because they don't chew on the material as aggressively as a pig 2 weeks post weaning. But oral fluids can be used, family oral fluids can be used. I find those to be a little bit more difficult sample type just because the pig doesn't play with the rope as much.
Mm-hmm. And in that, if you see some influenza activity in the nursery, how do we go back and rule out between, did it come from the sow farm that was testing negative on those 10 samples, or is it later or humans? How do you guys further dig into where that's coming from?
Yep. So obviously, if you have a background history of sampling at the sow farm, you at least should pick it up at some frequency at the sow farm. If it is endemically circulating there, then obviously, you know, as we find positive cases, we do, you know, genotyping or sequencing of it. And then we at least have something to compare to if we find post-weaning influenza. But what our data would say is there is a lot of influenza. Groups, you know, groups of pigs in the upper Midwest typically see flu 2 to 3 times during the growing period. There's just a ton of influenza out in the growing pig population.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And out of this dynamic of the influenza, and one thing that you mentioned also was the losses. So when you start to see that there is some losses occurring, that it's draining out our KPIs in sow farms, what, or in the nursery, what can we do to control influenza virus? In other words, is there some unnegotiable practice that should be done and taking place to control this pathogen?
Yeah, there's the traditional flu strategies, which involve either commercial or autogenous vaccine. How you apply that can be as a whole herd vaccination. It can be applied as a pre-feral vaccination, trying to boost maternal antibody. There's different arguments for what you're trying to do. If I'm trying to reduce my post-weaning losses, but I really am not that worried about the endemicity in the sow farm, a pre-feral vaccine might be suitable. We tend to try and have developed a model that we've published, several others are using it, to actually get farms flu negative or at least undetectable at the point of weaning. And a lot of it depends on severity also. We have strains of flu that really don't cost us significant losses. And we have strains of flu that frankly kick our rear end. And so basis the clinical picture also will dictate how aggressive we are at a flu control or cleanup strategy.
So how can you reduce the shedding of flu in wean pigs?
Right, and you guys are more the molecular experts than I am, so I probably will. I hope I don't screw this up that much, but there's been a lot of work by several vaccine manufacturers now looking at neuraminidase type vaccination to reduce shedding. We've been playing with that. There's strategies of, like I said, of delivering a high amount of maternal antibody by pre-feral vaccine in the sow. There's really not, to my knowledge, a non-biologic solution, i.e. an antibiotic or aspirin or I don't know of an antiviral type solution. Almost every control tool for influenza comes through a biologic of some sort.
Dr. Schmidt, you touched points on the vaccine part of the control strategy, and all the producers, they always have like these sort of questions regarding like how often should they like renew the vaccine or collect more material to do like another authorized vaccine or other vaccine strategy. So how often they have to update the vaccine is one of the questions. And the other one is that they can vaccinate the sow herd and also the piglets at the same time, or should we vaccinate both of them separately? Could you touch point in some of these strategies?
Yeah, so as far as your first point, as far as when should I update my vaccine if you're using an autogenous biologic, anytime, frankly, when you get a new strain, right? And there's debate about cross protection and the key antigenic sites, you know, with the H3s and the H1s are more complicated as far as key antigenic sites. But really, when you get a novel introduction, you likely need to update your vaccine. As far as your second question, what was it? Say that again, if you would.
Yeah, regarding like the vaccination strategies, well, the producers always ask the question, should I vaccinate only my sow herd or only my piglets or both of them? Could you elaborate?
Yep. Yeah, and several people's work has shown that there is maternal antibody interference as in regards to influenza vaccine. So, right, we typically think of immunity to the hemagglutinin. If you've used Sequivity products historically, that's been targeted toward the hemagglutinin. Apparently, as you elevate antibody level in colostrum and then try and vaccinate the piglet, that antibody will basically bind the vaccine and then the pig won't make an immune response to the vaccine. And so that's kind of always been the dilemma. If I vaccinate my sows, my piglet doesn't become vaccinatable until somewhere 6 to 10 weeks post-weaning. And if you guys have ever vaccinated pigs 6 to 10 weeks post-weaning, it's not a great time. And so there's a lot of pushback from going injecting large populations for flu post-weaning. So an alternate strategy is limited vaccine on the sow farm, trying to get the colostral antibodies low to be able to vaccinate your growing pig younger. I don't see a lot of people in that space. Much more focus is on getting high antibody level in the sow. Not many people vaccinate growing pigs for flu. They typically are a more specialty type flow, whether it's an antibiotic free flow or a gilt flow or you know, some type of a specialty market for those pigs. Generally commodity pork or commercial pork production, not a lot of growing pigs get vaccinated for flu.
And you talked about for when they do so, when there's a need to update, when there's a new strain, right? So it kind of emphasize the importance of this ongoing monitoring surveillance. You said so far about once a month. About in the growth, finished pigs or gilts, is there a certain frequency or you go by clinical signs and as needed on demand kind of thing?
Generally on the growing pig side, people only monitor when clinical signs are present. Most systems don't do regular monitoring of whether it's PRRS or flu post-weaning just because of cost, right? It would be great if we had regular monitoring downstream. We probably frequently would catch something before it goes clinical and we could, you know, almost preemptively treat groups of pigs, but that's, in my experience, is very uncommon.
Mm-hmm. And how about the gilts? How do we make sure that they are properly, you know, immunized and acclimatized so that, like you said, at the end of the day in the breeding herd, they're going to produce negative pigs at the weaning.
Right. So one of our big pushes is to our multiplication partners. If for 25 years ago, right, we had to convince them we need a PRRS negative naive gilt, right? And they've accommodated that. Then it was, I need a myco negative gilt. I would argue we need our multiplication partners to strive to get to a influenza negative gilt. Then as I take that gilt, and generally we have weaned to finish gilt developers on our sow farms, which may be structurally different from other systems out there, but taking control of that gilt at a young age is a good thing, generally, where I can control my gilt as long as I can. I can acclimatize her to that herd for as long as possible so she's not actively shedding whatever bug by the time she farrows. So having a weaned finished gilt developer is a good thing to have, as well as a flu negative gilt coming in. Now, if you've got a gilt source that is influenza positive, groups of gilts will shed flu for somewhere around 70 days. And so you may need to have an extended, what we call an extended quarantine, for about 70 days where they are housed, you know, at least in some type of you know, different airspace before then they enter the actual sour to prevent them from bringing flu, you know, group after group back into your sow farm. So we would use extended quarantine, especially on filtered farms, if we have a flu positive gilt source.
And the vaccination side, is it going to be like the more like the growth finishing pigs, or are they going to?
No, we would typically vaccinate our gilts with, we have maybe a complicated flu strategy where we have a more of a system level influenza vaccine, kind of like how the human world gauges influenza, right? In the spring, they choose what isolates are likely to be a problem in the upcoming disease year. We use Filgogger to help us select our strains, and we'll make a system level autogenous vaccine. And our gilts traditionally would get two doses of that, right? And that's on the hope we can prevent if we get one of those strains. But when we do get a different strain, we may need to make a specific vaccine for that herd.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting, Dr. Schmidt. We thank you very much to be here with us today, and see you guys next month.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you.